You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Do you have a hobby or maybe more than one? Tell us about it. You are our guest. We want to hear about your hobby. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. There's a huge variety of hobbies out there that people do. Collecting stuff, craft projects, art, woodworking, sports, games. The list goes on and on. Call in now and tell us about yours, your hobby, what it is, how you got into it, what it means to you. The number is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go right to your calls now. Doris is with us in Green Bay. Doris, what's your hobby?
Pen pals.
Pen pals.
I'll tell you, pen pals. I'll tell you how it started. When I was 12 years old, we had neighbors that had a girl 2 years younger than I. She had cerebral palsy. So her father would bring home the Playmate magazine, and I would read it to her. And when I came home from school, I'd read to her also and other things, and her mother would be busy in the kitchen. So I wrote a letter to the magazine wanting to get some letters for the girl. Well, it worked. And they came by the truck right to the house, even with so much mail, and for her. And then they brought some to me. And that's how my hobby began. And it was 3 cents postage. I was using my parents' stamps at the beginning. Well, I ended up meeting some of the pen pals, and once we, after I was long gone married with that deal, I still had pen pals, and still do have some in foreign countries, which is nice now that we can see and talk to each other on our cell phones. Or
fantastic.
A new way now we can see and talk.
That is wonderful.
One girl was born in London on the same day and year as I here in Green Bay.
That's...
So we've compared things with her, and I call her my twin.
That's fantastic, Doris. Thank you so much for getting us started. Wow, a lifelong hobby started at an early age. What is your hobby? Top that one. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Want to hear what you do in your spare time, how you got started, what it does for you. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We asked our Wisconsin Public Media colleagues to share some of their stories. Marta Bechtol, Executive Director of the Educational Communications Board, says she has a long history with quilting.
We moved around a lot during my husband's military career, and in 1999 we were moving into a townhouse on Fort Wainwright in Alaska, and a couple of the neighbors came over to size me up, and one of them asked me, "Do you sew?" To which I offered an eager yes, because I've been an avid sewer since I was a teenager. And then the other one turned to me and said, "Do you quilt?" And I said I did not. And then they looked at each other, and then they turned back to me, and they said, "Well, you do now." And that was that.
How about you? Do you quilt or sew or collect or woodwork or you name it? Fill in the blank with your hobby right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Share your hobby story right now. The line is open for you at 800-642-1234. Madeline Fox, WPR education reporter, also loves to sew, mostly apparel, but sometimes bags and purses too. She says, "I love that it connects me to a bigger community of people who sew, both online and in person through my local sewing guild. It's fun to have a hobby totally different from my job that makes me concentrate and try new things and work through problems. And I have something I can wear to show for it." How about you? Call in now at 800-642-1234. I know people are excited about this. We're getting calls on all our other conversations today, people wanting to get into this hobby talk. 800-642-1234 is the number for you to call in now to talk about your hobby. Let's listen to another story from one of our colleagues, Clarissa Johnson, in our audience services department. I hope as a Food Friday fan, given her hobby.
One of my hobbies is cooking. I kind of wax and wane with it as I have more energy, but I really enjoy fermenting foods a lot because most of the time all of the effort is in the setup and cleanup, and then you kind of just let bacteria and yeast do their thing. I also like baking bread a lot when I have the energy. I think there's something a little bit therapeutic about kneading dough by hand if you can, and even if you can't, it's still great to have fresh baked bread in the house. I also used to bake bread with my grandma when I was younger, and so I can feel a little bit more connected to her as well, even if she's hundreds of miles away.
That's a great story. Let's go back to your calls with your hobbies at 800-642-1234. Liz is with us in Columbus. Hi, Liz.
Hey, Rob. I'm a bread baker, and when the pandemic started, I heard about sourdough. All for years, and I'm like, what's the big deal about sourdough? So I'm one of those pandemic sourdough bakers.
Where did you get your starter, Liz, or did you make your own?
I made my own.
Okay. I mean, I've got a brother out in San Francisco, actually, and he was for a while big into sourdough and always had the starter, and then he brought it out to my folks in Michigan, and they had their starter. They've let their starters expire, though. You're still going strong, it sounds like.
I am, yes. In fact, I bake sourdough every couple of days, and my neighbors love me.
Yeah, because that's the great thing about baking. You can bake more than you can eat, so you can make friends by giving away the extras.
The mailman, the Amazon deliver, everybody, they like my bread, so I'll keep baking. And it's cheaper than therapy. Flour is much cheaper than therapy.
Excellent. Public radio hosts like sourdough bread too, Liz. Just I'm going to put that out there for you. Thanks. Thanks a lot for calling in, Liz, at 800-642-1234. We heard from Tracy on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tracy is a fan of woodworking, specifically making cabinets, also vegetable and native plant gardening, making cold processed soap. Oh, I almost said soup. This is soap. Don't confuse the two. Hiking, kayaking, reading, kitten fostering, and cooking. Wow. That's a lot of great hobbies. Thanks for sharing that with us, Tracy. Let's go back to your calls now. Tom is with us in Turtle Lake. Hi, Tom.
Hi, this is Tom Olson. I started making wooden bowls about 3 years ago when I retired at age 75. And we had a big storm here, and now I'm turning all our dead trees into wooden bowls and really enjoy it. And I found that there's a lot of other men my age that have retired in the area that are doing the same thing.
Cool.
It's just a phenomenon.
Is it basically like whittling? What's your toolkit for making wooden bowls? A lathe?
Like a lathe, yeah.
Okay.
We turn them.
Excellent. How many do you reckon you've made so far?
Oh, two or three dozen, I guess. I give them away to the family members.
Excellent, Tom. Thanks a lot. That is a great hobby. I love it. Thanks for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Heather joins us now in Madison. Heather, hello.
Hi.
Hi, what's your hobby?
First time caller. My hobby is an online pedigree database for Wisconsin State Dog, the American Water Spaniel.
So you maintain a website about the American Water Spaniel?
I maintain a website, and I have a pedigree database that has all of the dogs going back to the founding dogs from 1938.
Wow. Now, probably anybody who wants to know about this has found your website, but just in case, Heather, somebody wants to know more about the pedigree of their American Water Spaniel, how are they going to find you?
ScaniBrownDogs.com.
ScaniBrownDogs?
BrownDogs, yes.
.com.
If you can imagine, Wisconsin State Dog comes in one color, brown.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Heather. That's a cool hobby. Wait a minute. Are you still there, Heather?
I'm still here.
Do you have one or more American Water Spaniels?
I currently have two. I've had one by my side for more than half my life. They are the best breed. Under 50 pounds, curly brown, floppy ears, super fun.
Wonderful. I'm glad I remembered to ask you that. Thanks for calling in, Heather. We are taking your calls about your hobbies. We want to hear what you do for fun and recreation. Arts, crafts, collections, activities, you name it. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're taking your calls about the hobbies in your life. You can join in and share yours at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. John is with us in Kenosha. John, hi, what's your hobby?
My hobby is competitive trap shooting. I do it with my team.
And how far have you traveled to go to competitions?
I've traveled to Cincinnati, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Is your team pretty good?
Yeah, we've placed first in states and third in nationals.
And it sounds pretty fun. Is it? I mean, A, it's a fun activity. Is it pretty cool to do it as part of a team?
Yeah, it really is, because you get to meet new people and stuff.
Cool. John, thanks a lot for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. Want to listen to another story about hobbies from a WPR colleague? This is Alyssa Benno with PBS Wisconsin.
I love giving new life to old furniture, whether it's family heirlooms or thrift store finds. My orbital sander is my favorite toy. This old house is my favorite resource. And my favorite way to spend an afternoon is in the paint and stain aisle at the hardware store. It's a hobby that forces me to slow down. I've learned the beauty of real wood, the importance of pre-stained wood conditioner, and why you shouldn't use an orbital sander in the basement, unless your favorite thing to spend money on every 2 weeks is home air filters. It can be meticulous, like the process of refinishing a 100-year-old hand-carved dining set that was passed down in my dad's family. But when I had finished it, my favorite thing wasn't how beautiful it turned out. It was hearing my dad and his siblings share memories of the meals they had at it while growing up, and knowing that now that it's in my own kitchen, I'll get to do the same.
It's a great story. We are taking your calls about your hobbies at 800-642-1234. Bob joins us now in Two Rivers. Bob, what is your hobby?
My hobby is collecting miniature anvils.
Miniature anvils? I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, it's a big thing. Just Google miniature anvils and you'll have all kinds of time to spend with them. Anyway, I'm an amateur blacksmith or a wannabe blacksmith, and I started collecting little anvils about 30 years ago. And since 1997, I've had cast over 4,000 anvils with over 200 different names of people, places, and events on them. I own the patterns, and I change the letters, and the little foundry in Collins, Union Brass and Aluminum Foundry, they do all my casting, and I just finish them. And there's a big network of anvil collectors all over the country.
Cool. Okay, I did exactly what you said and looked it up online. I'm seeing, yeah, they're like, some of these guys are 2 pounds, because I think anvils, I think, really heavy. Not these are really little, though.
You'd look up mini anvils.
Yeah, yeah.
M-I-N-I.
Oh, okay.
Mini anvils. Yeah.
I just look miniature anvils. Okay. So how many do you have sitting around now?
Well, of the thousands or the 200 different names I made, when I make a order, I save one of each one. So if I get another order, I know how to set the letters on them, because the tedious job is changing the letters on the pattern. Little aluminum letters get epoxied to the part A and part B pattern, as I call it. And then take them to the foundry and he casts them. And then I bring them home and I have a little machine shop. I grind the top and the bottom and put the hardy hole is this, the square hole, and the Pritchell hole is a round hole, and they have to have that. And
wow.
Yeah. But at my own collection, I've had about 600 of them. And I'm getting to where I got to start parting with some of my treasures. So they're going by the wayside, some of them.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Wow. That was the thing I didn't know existed. Mini anvil collection. Thanks, Bob, for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Robert joins us next in Sheboygan. Robert, hi.
Hi. I collect Magic the Gathering cards. And
you know, Magic was has been a big thing for years, and I actually stopped playing in 1996, but got back into it when I was older. I play old school Magic, so only older cards, but I travel all over the country now, and I get to, you know, meet all these people that I never would have before, and we all have this kind of shared passion for playing this game that we played when we were children. There's a lot of nostalgia involved with it.
Oh, yeah. Now, I'm a big game player. I've played Magic back in the day. Playing games and collecting games, they sometimes run afoul of each other, Robert. How do you preserve the cards that you're also playing with?
Well, you know, I collect a lot of these things out of nostalgia, even if I don't play the actual card. But, you know, in my opinion, these cards were meant to be played. So even if there's a chance I might injure the card by actually playing the game, you know, I want to see that card on the table, and I want to see my opponent's face when I actually get that card out there and play it, even if they haven't seen it in 20 years.
Robert, thank you so much. I'm on the same page. I think they're meant to be played, so I don't wrap them up in plastic or anything like that. We are taking your calls about your hobbies at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Parker joins us next in Janesville. Parker, what is your hobby?
I go cycling, and I've been getting into doing bike tours with a group of friends around Wisconsin.
Ooh, what are some of the highlights of your tours?
Last summer, we did a four-day tour from Janesville to Potosi and back, and we hammock camped. So, hiking for 4 days.
You're breaking up, but you answered the question I was going to ask. Hammock camping along the way. I wonder if that was like you're biking from motel to motel or campsite to campsite. I get it. Parker, thanks a lot for sharing that. Sorry we lost you there. 800-642-1234 is the number to call and share your hobbies with Central Time and the world. Dale is next in Madison. Hi, Dale.
From Appleton.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dale in Appleton. I think our producer misheard you there. But what? More importantly, what is your hobby?
Woodworking.
What kind of things do you do?
You name it. I started with the simple stuff like burrows and other simple things like that. And the Holy Spirit gives me a lot of really unique, awesome ideas and stuff. And I make some really cool stuff. Summers, I couldn't find it, but I have a list that's almost 40 things long of different things I've made.
Wow.
And stuff. And I can do pretty much anything with wood. So wood is pretty neat. You can, depending on what type it is, you can make stuff with really super hard wood if it needs that ability and
cool.
To stay old. Or you can use cheaper pine or whatever for other softwood stuff.
Wow. Dale, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. A lot of great wood projects. Thanks for calling in from Appleton, Dale. I appreciate it. Elizabeth joins us next in Madison. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi, I collect hiking medallions ever since I was 5 years old. They go on my hiking stick that I've had for that long.
Where does one get a hiking medallion?
I get them from state parks and national parks. Every time I go, I will always find one, and they're actually in order from the first one I've visited to the last one.
Oh, so. Cool. So how do you store them or display them in order?
So they attach to my hiking stick that I'll take, and one day once it's completely filled up and I can't add anymore, I plan on hanging it and having it just be a memento of all my travels.
Awesome. Wow, what a great way to remember your trips, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I love it. We are taking your calls for another few minutes with your hobbies. Share them with us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Eli is up next in Madison. Hi, Eli. What's your hobby?
Hi there. I collect Civil War relics, bullets, belt buckles, that kind of thing.
Wow. How do you find them? Do you go to conventions, or are there dealers, or how do you track those down?
Yeah, it's kind of a mix. I like to go to a lot of battlefields when I travel. So when I go there, I check out antique shops in the area. I'm real particular about provenance, where they come from, mm-hmm. and who found them. And then, I just have a nice collection. I'm down to 3 giant cases now. So
you've been pairing it down a little bit?
Well, I'm just trying not to collect as much until I get more space, but it's hard not to. So.
All right. Thanks for sharing that, Eli. John is with us next in La Crosse. John, hi.
Yes, hello. How you doing?
Good. What's your collection or your hobby?
I collect Pez dispensers.
Cool. What are some of the highlights of your Pez dispenser collection? I know there's a zillion of them out there.
Yes. I started in 1997 or so. My children, I gave a couple to my children, and since I started collecting them, got about 5,000 in my collection. My favorites, it's hard to say. They used to start out with only a couple a year, but now in the last several years, it's just getting kind of ridiculous, actually. But
John, that sounds like a great collection, 5,000 pieces. Time for another caller or two. Paula is on the line in Green Bay. Paula, what is your hobby?
Well, I'm a geologist, so I decided that one of the things I was going to do was collect a rock from a specific formation from every county in Wisconsin.
Cool. Are you up to 72?
No, I'm at about 26.
Okay. Oh, your work's cut out for you then. Thank you. Paula, time for one more caller. Cameron is with us now in Green Bay. Cameron, what's your hobby? Oh, we lost Cameron, but I have a note. It says playing Dungeons & Dragons was Cameron's hobby. We heard from Jacqueline on Facebook who says hobbies include cooking and baking, playing the hammered dulcimer, and singing in church choir. Jacqueline says they're retired, so hobbies help give purpose for life and a reason to get out of bed in the morning. Thank you, everybody, for sharing those great stories. A lot of great hobbies in there. Wish I had time to do them all. I got a few of my own, though. You can keep sharing your hobby stories, though, over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I could share them over the rest of the week on the show. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, we'll look at the role state and tribal governments play in pipelines after a move by the Biden administration to give them more authority. And large-scale livestock farms can have a big impact on small communities in Wisconsin. We'll check out a new report. That's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, gas prices hit another record high yesterday. We'll talk to an energy market researcher about the effort to bring prices down. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, federal programs expanded access to free school lunches during the pandemic that may come to an end soon as Congress didn't extend the funding. We'll find out what's at stake. First, the average cost of gas in Wisconsin hit yet another record high yesterday, up to $4.81 a gallon. Oil cost nearly double the amount it did this time last year. There are a lot of things pushing gas prices up. Supply hasn't matched up with demand. People are driving more than they were, of course, during the height of the pandemic. And the war in Ukraine means that millions of barrels of Russian oil have been largely pulled from the supply chain. All this has put pressure on President Biden, who later this month will travel to Saudi Arabia to meet with leaders about oil production capacity in his latest attempt to bring gas prices down. But how much control does Biden have here? What would it take for prices to go down? Our guest today will give us his insight on where he sees the oil market headed this summer and beyond. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. How are higher gas prices affecting you? Have you cut back on driving if you've been able to? How would you like to see the government tackle the problem? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You could also email ideas@wpr.org. Abhi Rajendran is an energy market researcher with Energy Intelligence. He's also an adjunct research scholar at Columbia University's Center on Global Energy Policy. Abhi, welcome to Central Time.
Ryan, thanks for having me.
Let's take a look kind of step by step here. Before the Russian invasion of Ukraine, gas prices had already gone up some, not to their current levels. What was driving price increases at that point, pre-Ukraine invasion?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is, this is kind of a steady rise that we've seen for a while. I think, all through, last year, as you noted, we saw kind of a steady rise of the average retail price from the twos, kind of the mid twos to start last year. And we ended last year, you know, kind of comfortably above three. And we were kind of creeping towards the mid threes, kind of pre-war. And then, of course, everything had changed, has changed in the last couple of months. You know, we were already starting to see the effects of tightening oil and product markets, you know, even pre-war. You know, we had in oil markets, we had inventories, you know, starting to, you know, kind of get into some dangerous waters in terms of low levels. And similarly, you know, gasoline and diesel too, were also kind of headed in that direction. So that was all, you know, kind of contributing to prices pushing higher. And then of course the, you know, the invasion of the Ukraine by Russia has kind of changed everything, you know, put all of those trends into overdrive.
I want to run a few narratives that I've heard out there past you and see, help us untangle them. One was pandemic hit. Demand went way down. Prices of one benchmark went down, I think, below zero at one point. Production spun down some because of that. But then as demand came back up, the supply, for whatever reason, people didn't start gearing up production to match that. Is that part of what's happening? And if so, why?
Now, that's certainly part of what's happening, and I think there's two parts to that. You know, there's an oil market part to it where, you know, we've had, you know, U.S. oil production reach close to 13 million barrels a day in late 2019, early 2020, right before the pandemic hit. And as you noted, you know, we had this, you know, kind of shock in the spring of 2020 in terms of demand, in terms of consumption, and of course, you know, the lockdowns and everything that happened around the world. And since then, demand has, you know, by and large come back. You know, I think you could argue that, you know, jet fuel is not quite normalized yet. But you know, gasoline, diesel have by and large come back. But U.S. oil supply is still quite a bit below, right? You know, we're still, you know, just around, you know, kind of 11.6 million barrels a day of U.S. oil production. So still quite a bit below that 13 million barrel a day threshold. And it is rising, but it's rising, you know, kind of in a gradual way, you know, recovering post-pandemic. And we can certainly touch on why. I think the second factor is on, you know, further downstream from oil. It's on the refining side. You know, the U.S. market has closed, you know, 1 to 1.5 million barrels a day of refining capacity, closed and or, you know, announced conversions to biofuels and other products. That's just in the U.S. And that's, you know, also been a global trend. We've lost 3 to 3.5 million barrels a day of global refining capacity. And this is partly why, you know, you're kind of in the dynamic that you are now with kind of shortages and these price spikes happening for products, for diesel, for gasoline, and kind of pulling oil along with it, because we have all this capacity that was lost over the last couple of years. Demand has largely come back, and you know, and when you threw the kind of the Russia invasion into the mix, it's really sort of sent the market into a spiral and a little bit of a panic. So I think you know, demand is back. Supply is not, for both oil and for you know, refining capacity. I think both of them are contributing to this environment.
We are talking about gas prices, why they are where they are. Abhi Rajendran is with us from Energy Intelligence. You can join in with your questions, your thoughts, maybe your experiences. What do higher gas prices mean for you? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jack is with us in Viola. Jack, hello.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for the show. All the explanations that your guest gave doesn't justify the record profit taking that's going on with the oil company. All of it doesn't make any sense, because you can buy gas wherever you go. There's supply everywhere. Okay. Nobody's going to a gas station and say, oh, we're out of gas. No. And we know that under former President Trump, they cut oil production in Saudi Arabia. That's why Biden's going over there. But the point is, you got record profits by companies that we are always, what do you call it, supporting with our tax money. And these guys are taking us to the cleaners.
Jack, thanks for the call. Abhi, we're seeing quarterly reports out from a bunch of different oil companies showing big numbers in profits, in some cases record profits. How big is Jack's question as part of the story here?
Yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting and a relevant point from Jack that and to your point, you know, most companies in the energy space, whether they're producing oil or gas or refiners, are generating record profits. In many cases, the highest quarters that they've delivered earnings results in their history, over the last couple of quarters. I think in a normal cycle, these type of profit levels and all the cash flow that they generate from these profits would translate to these companies, reinvesting that capital, right? They would be, taking that capital and, putting it back in the case of oil companies or gas companies, at the drill head to increase production, increase rig counts rapidly, and kind of get the supply side going again. On the refining side, they would be, especially with these type of profits, they would be looking to see where they can add refining capacity, whether it's in expanded capacity of existing facilities or potentially even looking to build new facilities. I think what's different this time is this whole conversation around the energy transition, a focus on climate, and concerns about having to cut emissions, looking out over the next couple of decades. This is also kind of entered into the budgeting and capital allocation conversation with companies. And I think that's part of the reason why, they are not, sort of being allowed to, reinvest at the rates at which they would have in the past. And this kind of goes back to investors, right? I think, investors have mandated this capital discipline on companies, have asked them to sort of be more restrained with spending and expenditures, and have shown a preference for, if these companies are generating high levels of profits and cash flows, for them to simply, increase their dividends or their buybacks and return it back to the shareholders as opposed to reinvest it. So I think that's what's different this time. I would say, the companies are, being told not to reinvest by investors. They are, their whole, kind of management compensation models have changed over the last couple of years to prioritize, returning cash flows and not, reinvesting and growing. And that's part of the reason why we continue to have this hole on the supply side for both oil and for products. And I would just say that, the price of, any, kind of energy market, and in for our discussion, it's oil, it's gasoline, it's diesel. It's really sort of set by, by international markets, right? It's not set by, these companies, or a group of companies or any one company. It's set by the international markets, and the war and the conflict has, tightened international markets, especially in Europe, especially for diesel, and that's kind of spilled over into gasoline now. And the U.S. can't really sort of insulate itself from these global market dynamics. And, refiners are generating record profits and they are incentivized to run as hard as they can. And in the U.S., they are. U.S. refiners are really, sort of running pretty much as hard as they can. And we're only into the start of the summer. We're not even, into kind of peak driving season yet. And so they're kind of running as hard as they can. And there's not really that much harder that they can go. As they run hard, they will continue to buy more and more oil, right? So even though oil has gone from kind of 70, 80 up to, 110, 120 now, they'll continue to buy that. Because
we're talking to energy market researcher Abhi Rajendran about gas prices and the many factors that influence the number you see on the pump. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. How is the high cost of fuel influencing your life, your personal part of the economy? Are there things you would like to see the federal government, for example, doing to try to bring prices down? Call 800-642-1234. Have you changed driving habits, if you're able, cutting back on optional road trips, for example, carpooling? I don't know. You tell us. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about oil and gas prices with Abhi Rajendran, energy market researcher with the group Energy Intelligence. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your possible solutions, and what the price of gas means to you these days. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Tom is with us in Menominee Falls. Hi, Tom.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to ask your guest, if we were just to flat out get rid of all taxes that the U.S. government takes, both state and federal, if there is a difference, how much of a difference would it affect at the pump per gallon? I mean, we send tens of billions of dollars to fight other wars. Can't we make some tax cuts here to help us low-income people out?
Tom,
thanks for the call.
Abhi, how much do state and federal taxes play into what we see when we're at the gas pump?
No, it's a great question from Tom. We've seen this over the last couple of months. Various states like Maryland, Georgia, Connecticut, New York, for example, start to cut these gas taxes, right? It is certainly a tool to kind of help ease the burden on the consumer. I think part of the challenge at this point is, while that is a tool that's being used, the market continues to tighten. And so some of these tax cuts are just kind of being run over and offset by a market that just continues to, get shorter on these products and continue to drift higher over the next couple of months. And I think the other part of it is that, yes, gas tax relief helps, to take a little bit off the price. The knock-on effect to that is that it continues to encourage demand, right? So demand remains relatively firm. The supply side continues to remain restrained, and so prices keep going up. So it is a tool. It is certainly a tool, and we've seen it used certainly at the state level. And of course, taxes are part of the gas price. The problem is, I think the market dynamics continue to point to higher prices. Right now, we're just shy of $5. For kind of a national average for a retail price. I see this kind of getting to the mid fives as driving season really kicks in over the next couple of months. So that's kind of the push and the torque. Behind the market is continues to point to higher prices, unfortunately.
Let's bring out another caller now. Tom is with us in Milwaukee. Tom, hello.
Hi. I'm wondering if the world situation stays the same for the rest of the year, what will be the situation in the coming winter when energy demands increase for heating?
Interesting question. We're bringing natural gas into the picture as well. Abhi, do you have thoughts on that?
It's an important one from Tom, and I certainly cover the gas side of it as well. And for all the talk of gasoline and oil, we're only just now starting to talk about the fact that U.S. natural gas prices have gone from $3-4 now to $9-10. So made a pretty significant change, and it's a similar story on the gas side too. It's constrained supply, pretty strong demand, and of course, strong demand in Europe and in Asia, for our exports, and as Europe in particular tries to wean off Russian gas, points to a tighter market for a while here in the U.S. as well. I think this is it's an important question. We are already at kind of $9-10, and it's just the start of the summer. I think there's certainly risk that the winter could see some very tight pricing generally, but certainly in some of those key areas, right? Like up in the Northeast, in California, parts of the Midwest could see, kind of Europe style pricing, $20-30 potentially. So it's going to be pretty challenging, certainly for folks trying to, you know, heat their homes and stay warm in the winter, but also for businesses. You know, industrial, commercial demand, will face the effects of higher prices both this summer and potentially even higher prices as we get into the winter. So that is also kind of part of the energy challenge as we look out to the second half of the year.
Tom, thanks for that call. I'll be focusing back in on oil and gas, you know, for our cars and whatnot. You've described a market where businesses don't necessarily want to invest to increase capacity, a global market where the United States doesn't necessarily control these things. Are there things that, say, the Biden administration could do to make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, it's an important question with not very easy answers in terms of any kind of low hanging fruit that the administration could look to use, right? In the oil market, you had the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, that was a tool and an option to, you know, avoid extreme dislocations in supply. And we've been, you know, leaning pretty heavily on that, and we'll continue to do so. There is no, you know, real similar tool for gasoline markets, right, or diesel markets. I think some of the possible levers are, you know, back to the other Tom's question around, gas tax relief. These are levers that can be pulled at the state level, at the local level, to provide some relief. But again, I think it's, you know, basically what you're talking about is, trying to limit the upside for prices this summer. There's no real sort of tool that could, you know, get prices to stop going up or certainly, have prices go down. I think the trend as we get into driving season here still points to prices going up. And it's just a market that you just don't have a whole lot of control over. And the administration has done other things too, right? Like the ethanol waiver relief and some of those areas. So these are all kind of marginally help, potentially preventing, $6+ prices, right? But still, you're looking at a trend that's pointing up over the next couple of months.
And just our last minute and a half or so, I was reading in 2008, prices went up and people drove less. You know, you can't completely get rid of driving. A lot of people have to drive, but demand altered some as a consequence of those higher prices. And that doesn't seem to be happening now. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, we expect it to happen. We expect it to happen at the margin, certainly, both for gasoline and for diesel. But again, I think you're also kind of at this point where you're fighting, the seasonal uplift in demand, right? So even if, you do have a little bit of that demand impact at the margin, you're still going to see kind of an upward trend in demand over the next couple of months. And so perhaps you're talking about less growth over the next couple of months, as opposed to, demand actually not growing or falling because of that seasonal effect. And so, I think this is, it's a global market. So it's not just, US driving season, but it's, air conditioning season in the Middle East, it's construction season in other parts of the world. All of these are, kind of providing, kind of this upward thrust for both gasoline and diesel and oil prices as a knock-on effect. And so that is something that, we expect to see over the next couple of months. But, once you kind of get past the summer, right, I think, you referenced 2018, there is a risk that things just kind of get overheated and too high, and that we'll have to see some kind of a correction. And certainly this is something to watch out for, post-summer, right? Once you kind of get past that big bump in demand, demand will fall naturally anyway as you get into the fall. But that high price environment could make that fall sharper this time around, just like it did in 2008. Of course, there were other factors in 2008, mm-hmm. And there are, kind of more structural supply support factors this time, but, certainly a concern for the second half of the year.
Abhi, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Abhi Rajendran is an energy market researcher with Energy Intelligence, also an adjunct research scholar at Columbia University's Center on Global Energy Policy. He joined us today for a look at the issues contributing to high gas prices. Coming up after the news, we'll hear about the future of free school lunches and what it could mean for families if Congress doesn't continue to offer those programs over the course of the summer, some funding and some waivers set to expire at the end of this month. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.